Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Don't forget, we're activating the Board at Work network today and asking for you to post on our website the smartest and dumbest things your company is doing to cope with inflation. The smartest and dumbest things your company is doing to cope with inflation. You can post those things right now at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show and forward around the link. We hope by the time we talk about this next hour, and then we'll do a longer segment later in the week, that we have a real good list of how companies are coping. And this, you know, let's face it, this inflation came up fairly suddenly for a lot of folks, and people are trying to figure it out. So not even as a gotcha thing against your boss, but some tips and observations to try to help everybody cope with inflation smartly without laying you off, hopefully. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and post the smartest and dumbest things that your company is doing to cope with inflation. Now, earlier this month, we talked for days about the controversial vote that Barack Obama took on the FISA wiretapping bill. Now let's check out a vote in the Senate last week that left John McCain in an awkward position. The vote was on Medicare funding, whether to cut payments to most Medicare providers or mostly to the private Medicare plans known as Medicare Advantage. McCain abstained and did not take a position. Congress as a whole overwhelmingly voted to make the cuts to the private system, overriding a veto by President Bush. It was only, I think, the third override of any veto by this president in 7.5 years. So we will take a few minutes now to examine this issue, as well as what it might say about Senator McCain, who missed the vote. With me for this is Jeffrey Young from the newspaper The Hill, which covers Congress. Hi, Jeffrey. Welcome to WNYC. Thanks for doing this with us.
Oh, good morning. How are you doing?
Good. And let's explain this issue a little bit, because the headlines around the country in the last few days were, I think, a little misleading, because they focused on whether all Medicare providers would be hit with 10% reimbursement cuts. But I think this was really a dispute about privatization. Would you say that's the case?
Well, that's the reason why it took so long to get the bill done, yeah. Nobody, and that includes John McCain or President Bush, actually had any quarrel with doing something to prevent that 10% cut in what doctors get paid. The quarrel was over how to fund that fix. And what the Democrats wanted to do, as you noted, is take money away from these private plans in order to, you know, to pay for the doctors.
What was at the heart of the privatization question? Is there basic ideology here or interest groups?
Well, it's got to be a mix of both. The ideological aspect of that, I think, is evident in the relatively few number of Republicans in Congress who ended up voting against this bill at the end of the day. There is a notion, and President Bush evidently feels very strongly about this, that only by increasing the role of private insurance companies in the Medicare program can you do anything long-term to slow down the growth in spending on the program. In the short term, that hasn't shown to be true, but they still very firmly believe that. In addition to which, as you might imagine, the health insurance industry also felt very strongly about this, because they have a huge stake in this Medicare program, and they think that that stake can get bigger if they can hold on to what they already have. As it happened, with this bill, they're going to lose about $12 to $14 billion over the next 5 years.
Will that take away choices for recipients of Medicare, as the president claims?
Actually, it will to some extent. There are all kinds of different plans you can get depending on where you live, where instead of enrolling in traditional Medicare, you sign up for an HMO or a PPO, which is like an HMO for those who don't know. It's very similar. And then in this bill, what they were looking at was what they call private fee-for-service plans, which is the name of it itself is essentially meaningless. But the difference between that and an HMO is that there's no network of doctors or hospitals. You can theoretically go to see any doctor or hospital you want. The trouble is, and this is what Democrats in Congress were trying to address, is that those plans cost considerably more than the other types of health plans, and considerably more than it would cost, according to all the data I've seen, than it would cost to just leave that person in regular Medicare. Nevertheless,
so can I stop there
sure,
for a minute?
Sure.
Because I think that is such an important fact and goes against what the proponents of privatizing part of Medicare, giving some of Medicare over to the private insurance industry, claim. And that is that it would save money because the market can do things more efficiently than, you know, the one-size-fits-all government Medicare plan. It has turned out, in fact, to be the opposite?
Up to this point, yeah. And that actually – and this is not even a mistake. This is the way they wrote the bill. They changed the way these plans get paid about 5 years ago in the same legislation, actually, that created the privately administered drug benefit, which is separate from these other health plans. The idea was if you pay the plans a little bit more, you can get more companies involved, and that will increase competition in the market. And then over time, year after year, when the plans bid to participate, the bids will get lower and lower because there's more and more competition. In addition to which, the plans are supposed to be using this extra money to finance additional benefits. So, for example, if you're in one of these private plans, maybe you can go to a chiropractor or you have vision care that you wouldn't have if you were in regular Medicare. So that's the argument in favor of them.
So President Bush was going to veto this bill because it would make cuts to these private plans. That veto, he did veto, and the veto was overridden overwhelmingly. I guess any veto by definition is pretty overwhelming. It was 70 votes ultimately in the Senate, more than 300 in the House. And where was Senator McCain?
Senator McCain was campaigning. I mean, to put this in the larger context of him missing this vote, and by the way, on this particular bill, the Senate voted on this four times in between June and July, and he missed all of those. Senator Obama, I think, missed three of those four votes, if I'm not mistaken. This is pretty typical. You know, I always wonder sometimes how people in the home states of members of Congress who are running for other offices feel about the fact that their representatives are not, you know, actively representing them in Congress. McCain has missed most of the votes this year. He's been on the campaign trail a lot. Obama, Senator Clinton, these other people missed some too. But you know, because the Democrats control the floor agenda, a lot of times it's less worth it for McCain to come back and cast a vote that's going to haunt him. It's better to miss it in a way, politically speaking.
And my understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that he didn't take a public position. So if he's out campaigning and doesn't cast the actual vote, if it's not going to be a crucial, you know, make or break single vote, that's understandable. But did he duck this issue or did he take a public position on it?
I think it's fair to say he ducked it for a long time. To the best of my knowledge, the first statement his campaign made about his position on this piece of legislation was a statement they issued the day of the vote, either right before or right after the vote was actually cast. I mean, I personally called his campaign and his Senate office numerous times over the last couple of months because this issue has been cooking around since basically November or December of last year.
Right, and there were a series of votes, and he missed it. And remember, this is the vote, I guess, the first override vote, if I'm not mistaken, is the one where they so publicly trotted out Senator Edward Kennedy, took him from his sickbed onto the floor of the Senate so that he could cast this one vote because he felt so strongly and the party felt so strongly and they were within a vote or two of, at that point, of being able to override this veto. So this was a very high-profile vote, and Senator McCain hasn't even taken a position.
Yeah, I mean, he eventually came out to say, you know, in so many words, if I had been there, I would have voted no and gave a
– Oh, he did finally.
He did finally, but not until it was essentially over, which, you know, I'm not really sure how to interpret that. But, you know, I mean, if you know what you think about something, I'm not really sure how you're served by keeping that to yourself.
Maybe he ducked the news cycle. Maybe this is why I didn't know he took that position, because he ducked the news cycle where everybody was talking about the bill, and then he took the relatively unpopular position just a day late. But is this an indication, the fact that he would have voted against the override, which meant he would have voted to continue to throw money at these privatized Medicare providers, is it an indication of where he wants to go with health reform?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Senator McCain's health care platform, you know, apart from Medicare, is, you know, very much in contrast to Senator Obama's, and it's, you know, its ideology between the, you know, the two main parties, it is the belief that if you can fix the market in a way that makes it easier for health insurance companies to sell more types of health insurance to more people at different rates and, you know, different localities, et cetera, then the market will eventually fix itself and it won't cost so much to buy a plan. He has some things in his larger health care reform plan, and, you know, as far as tax credits and things like that, that it would be designed to help people who still couldn't afford it. But
right.
Know,
there are interesting tax changes in McCain's plan in both directions. If I'm not mistaken, McCain wants to tax health benefits as income, which they are not currently. So that would make it harder for employers to offer, or give employers less incentive to offer health benefits, taxing them as income, and then also give a deduction to workers or other individuals who buy health insurance or health care out of pocket. So it would really seem to serve the function of shifting the burden more from employer to employee as a means of containing costs. Would you say that's accurate?
More or less. I mean, the idea being that that there's an unfairness in the tax code, that if you work for yourself or you work for a small business, you have to buy your health insurance with your post-tax money. But if you work for a larger company that offers you health benefits, you get it, you know, at a lower price tag. There's also, and I don't know that Senator McCain has ever said this, but a lot of people believe that the connection between health coverage and work is kind of artificial in a way, and also it creates those problems where when you change jobs, well, if you lose a job, you lose your health insurance immediately. If you change jobs, you go without for the 1, 2, 3 months it takes for them to get the paperwork through. So, you know, the argument in favor of that is, well, if you're buying your own health insurance and the tax benefit is going to you as an individual, then you buy one plan and you keep it as long as you want.
So this is really, and we're out of time, but this is really going to be a big issue for the future, because people who look at this, I think, tend to agree, the economists, for example, that Medicare is actually in worse shape than Social Security, that Social Security has a problem that can be fixed. Medicare costs are exploding so much when you project out into the heart of the baby boom retirement, that this is actually going to be a bigger problem for the country going forward, even though Social Security is the buzzword that everybody always talks about. And one of the questions that the politicians will have to decide where they stand on is, are these private Medicare plans ultimately for the good or ultimately for the bad in containing costs and in serving people with their health care needs? So I think this is an indication, a little bit of the battle that's to come writ large over the next few years, you think?
Oh, absolutely. And I tell you right now, the health insurance industry here in town knows that if Senator Obama is elected president, you know, and everyone knows the Democrats are going to probably increase their majorities in both houses, this $14 billion they lost a couple of weeks ago is just the tip of the iceberg.
Everybody in town. Town in this case being Washington, the part
yeah.
of Washington being Capitol Hill. Jeffrey Young, a reporter for the newspaper The Hill, which covers Congress. Thanks a lot for clarifying this for us.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we're going to check out some of the images that you submitted in our photo challenge, Change for the Better, Change for the Worse. And everybody who's near a computer should go right now to WNYC.org and click on the slideshow, because we have 15 of your Change for the Better, Change for the Worse images. Oh, excuse me, 16 Change for the Better, Change for the Worse images at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Stay with us.